This is Johnny Bluestar. Welcome to Threshold, a global media event. Is the universe just a random dance of atoms? Or is it a manifestation of a supremely intelligent architect? Can its purpose, or our purpose here on Earth, be adequately assessed? Can we commune with it, know its intentions, cooperate with its direction? Here, we define Threshold as a gateway state of awareness, allowing mankind to cross into a place of real cognition. Threshold allows us to approach questions of higher reality through the door of experience rather than mere belief. Welcome to Threshold, where we tear away the veil from commercial media, bringing our audience and participants into another realm of reality and enhanced communication.
This is Johnny Bluestar, and this is show number 2 of a series of shows called Who's Minding the Planet, featuring a continuing interview with musician, composer, songwriter Zave Nathan and his wife and songwriting partner, Bonnie Blazak, whose professional name is Blaze. I just want to point out that Zave sings many of the songs he has written and we have performed here, so he's actually part of that American tradition of singer-songwriters. And since lyrics are a key component of songs, I think we should give extraordinary thanks to the incisive, clever, and often hopeful lyrics of Blaze, Bonnie's, as I said, Bonnie's professional name, who uses the fibers of her poetic paintbrush to integrate a gritty realism about the world with the sometimes challenging task of waking up to its reality and actually doing something. Usually when I have guests related to writing, film, or music, I'm interested in their creative processes. How do each of you come up with your ideas, and how do you manage to collaborate so effectively with each other?
Wow.
Well, I guess I'm sort of his muse, you know.
It's true.
Sometimes I'll say something, a phrase, a sentence, and he hears something melodic in it, plus it's a hook, plus it's clever wording, and it starts to spin into something bigger and becomes a song. Sometimes it's that he picks up the guitar and he is just fooling around and he finds a lick and a hook that he really likes and he starts playing it and we just sort of feel the emotion that that brings out and I start saying something about that emotion. So we collaborate very well, but you know, it's also because we're in love and we finish each other's sentences and that, you know, that interaction flows into our creative realm as well.
Yeah.
So I take it that this thing is not like you come up with the lyrics and he does the music. It's just like an evolution of you both together. Is that right?
Yeah, well, we can start with a song or like she said, a hook. For instance, she's going to say something that sounds like this. So the words are not real, but not really relevant to my ear because I hear da 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 da, right?
Right.
Rhythm to what she said. So from that I go da ba da 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 ba da 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 da, and it starts ding rhythmically. My brain is a computer, so I can add or subtract or move or speed up or so. Her being my muse, I capture the energy of what she says or her ideas. And because she was born here and she's a good writer, she's a better English speaker and writer than I am. So she had, well, she's better. So she does it.
Blaise, you started writing poetry, didn't you?
I started writing poetry when I was a child, actually, when I was 7 years old. And I used to read poetry books and I just loved them. And then I started writing my own short stories and poems. So, and even to this day, you know, with our unfortunate digital age that has brought wonderful things and terrible things, it's reduced our language to just tiny words. And here, I grew up in an era where writing with flourish and description and, you know, making it a fun read. Uh-huh. Remember when people used to enjoy reading a sentence that was just clever and just gave you this image, you know,
like the Beatles.
And now it's like, please don't send such long emails. I don't have time to read more than a few lines.
Zave, I know that you grew up with music from the very start, but when did you start to actually work on writing songs?
18.
And what inspired you?
I was fooling around. I was a professional dancer at 18. So I was surrounded with, you know, music, orchestras, dancers, makeup, feathers, costume, you know, all this stuff. And And I was on my way out of my parents' homes, my parents' house. And I remember I grew a beard. Yeah, I was on vacation. I didn't want to shave. And I had my my acoustic guitar. I already had a multi-track recording system. The house, it was just a two-track multi-track.
Right.
And I started recording as an experiment. On one track, you record the guitar, and then on the other track, you record the voice, and then you mix them down and submix, and then add another track. Which we used, this is what we used to call ping pong, ping ponging. And so I started like I do now. It was always the same process: put down a rhythm track, 3 minutes, and start humming melodies until I came up with a hooky one, and then put words to them and build the song this way. This is how I started, and I was guided and very, very impressed by Elton John.
Oh, okay. And, great songwriter.
Yeah. And so one album that really started light a fire under my awareness and creativity was Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, 1976.
Right. Great. Another great piece of music.
A double album and I don't know. 11 hits, I think, on this album, 10 or 11 hits. And it was produced by Gus Dudgeon. The lyrics were by Bernie Taupin. And that was the first time that I really, really, really listened to every note with headphones on this album for months. And that's one of my schools. This album is definitely, this is when I started to feel and understand as far as pop music is concerned.
What was your first song about?
That was about talking to French young children. Oh my God, you put me on the spot.
Sorry about that.
But it was a little guys, a little boy, little girl with your blonde eyes, look in the sky, with your blue eyes, look in the sky, and turn your heads, whatever. It's irrelevant, really. But that's how it started. That was my first attempt to songwriting.
Well, I want to ask you a question. You know, we promoted this program to some people anyway with a song that we're going to play now called Living in the Closet. And I'm interested in knowing some of the details, how this came together. Not just the, the sort of ideological reason that you did it, but also the collaborative aspect of it. How did that creatively emerge?
Well, do you want to take it on?
Yeah, we wrote this when when our two children were still living at home before they grew up and went away, which happened recently. And they were driving us a little crazy to the point that, we would not only retreat to our bedroom for some peace and quiet at the end of the night so we could, he could play his guitar and we could see what flowed.
I mean, you have to imagine we had a home in Santa Monica and both of the kids were going to school. So they were like 10 and 14. And then 14. And so imagine getting ready for school. Did you do your homework? Did you broke this? Why did you break this? I mean, all this, right? And okay, guys, it's 9 o'clock. Let's go to bed. We have to wake up tomorrow morning, go to school. So you always have the, I'm tired. I don't want to watch. I don't want to watch TV.
Well, my kids are about the same distance in age. So I had something very close to that too.
So what our routine was 9:30. We are closed door, the guitar's on the bed, and my muse is we're having a creative fun couple hours before we go to bed. And so this is go ahead, sweetie.
So this one particular night, the kids had just pulled every trick in the books. So frustrated that not only did we close our bedroom door and go into our room, but we went into our walk-in closet.
Oh no! So this is literally true, huh?
Really, yes, true. Yes. And we sat on the floor and we were laughing. God, we're living in the closet. And he picked up the guitar and he started doing a reggae beat, and started singing Living in the Closet. And then it evolved from there. We started thinking about, so why would someone choose to live in a closet? What are you hiding from, And it became about the population of our world living in the closet as if they don't want to know what's really going on out there. They're either hiding something from themselves because it's too much to bear, or they're hiding themselves from the world.
It's not a song about homosexuality at all.
Yeah.
In my case, I was always politically aware, but I was politically wrong at a certain point after 9/11. And I'll maybe go into that later because it's part of what we're going to discuss. But right now, let's play it. Let's play Living in the Closet. Program, we discussed the harsh awakening both Zave and Blaze felt during a time when they were both involved in real estate and thinking of running their own real estate business. Then came the early signals of the 2008 financial collapse, which created confusion for them and so many others in the day-to-day conduct of their business. They were confused because a collapse was coming that was related to the fraudulent securitized mortgages that were created by bundling dicey, poorly financed individual mortgages, which were acquired without any kind of real due diligence. In other words, the people didn't really have the money to do a mortgage. And sometimes there was absolutely no oversight from the banks or the lending institutions when they got it. And then these things were rated highly by the rating companies. At any rate, at one point, both of them saw the film Zeitgeist, which opened their eyes to an entirely new dimension of business and social political reality. My own awakening began later. I believe with Abu Ghraib in the realization that this was not an isolated incident, but a result of the policies of the United States that I found illegal, dangerous, and contemptible. This was the fault of my father, who was an attorney whose career, which was quite a bit oriented to protecting his clients from the self-serving interests of insurance companies, but was also punctuated by his efforts to combat segregation in the Deep South and police brutality. After that pattern of attempt to separate alleged terrorists from the principles that govern American justice by denying them rights to habeas corpus, rights to an attorney, the right to a speedy and just trial, and other rights granted to them by the Geneva Convention, I became extremely alarmed. Then I went over the events of 9/11 and various wars that followed and began to formulate an entirely different picture of political reality, one that contradicted all that I believed in and hoped from our country. As I did this, the revelations about surveillance drove me to the conclusion that our citizenry had lost its control over the country and was too asleep to do something. In our last Who's Minding the Planet, we questioned to some degree the source of the economic downturn of our country, the loss of our constitutional rights, the internal dangers facing the United States, which have been enormously increased by our porous borders and our lax immigration policies and many other tactics. We must simply face up for that, whatever reason, the tactics that are being deployed by a combination of central banking policies, the imperialistic military excursions overseas, the defunct trade policies, the lack of environmental safety governing our protection of food, water, and air resources, and the possible danger of hidden terrorist threats inside our own country is there. And since you take all these problems and see them in dozens of countries on this planet, my answer to the questions of who's minding the planet is probably the wrong people. One friend of mine addressed this question, is there a great conspiracy? I'm not sure, he said, but at least a very large number of smaller conspiracies. But that was one person's approach. Mine is still ambivalent about who's behind it. But how would you guys answer this question?
Who's behind it? Occult, the occult, the ones you don't see, the ones who operate in the shadow. Now, I will be blunt. What animal, what creature operates in the dark?
I'm not sure. Bats?
Yeah. Cockroaches. Vampires.
I have to say something about that word occult before we go on. You know, occult means hidden. And I do believe that there are secrets about the universe and about spiritual evolution that are necessarily hidden just because people cannot, even though it's what Goethe called the open secret, they can't necessarily access this positive direction of spirituality. So I have a feeling that you're really talking about a negative occult.
Yes, a very dark occult. It's the Illuminati bloodlines that have all kinds of power, the monarchies, you know, all of the European royal families are all within this bloodline, which they very, very carefully preserve from generation to generation. And for eons, they have ruled our planet, and they're still ruling it today. And we had no idea, you know, this is part of the spiritual awakening, is awakening to your 3D reality that you live in. You know, a spiritual enlightenment isn't just you close your eyes and go within and meditate and feel your connection to source, and that's all very good. But if you don't understand the physical world you live in, how are you enlightened? I remember Jacques Fresco, who is a 100-year-old inventor extraordinaire who's way ahead of his time, and who has put together a project in Florida called the Venus Project that shows how we can live without a money system, where the inhabitants can all give 4 hours a day work to the community in whatever area of their expertise or passion. Nobody gets paid, but everyone has everything they need. You have a roof over your head. You live in a beautiful community. You've got your food. Everything is provided for everyone. But you still have all this time to be with your family and teach your children and, you know, paint your paintings and, you know, all those things. And someone had said to him once, you know, well, I'm enlightened, you know. And he said, oh, you are, really? Well, do you know where your kidneys are? And the guy said, well, I don't know. They're somewhere like here in my back, right? You know, and he said, he showed him where his kidneys were. And he said, do you know the direction in which your heart pumps the blood throughout your veins and arteries in your body? And then he said, no, not really. He said, well, then how can you tell me you're enlightened? So I think it's a combination of really seeing the world and understanding the world for what it is, in balance with that finding and keeping that connection with source and knowing that, you know, we are probably multidimensional beings. We are more than we know. And but we've been kept down by this group of controllers. They don't want us to wake up. And that's what's happening now. We are waking up. Mm-hmm. And the proof of it is that people are starting to understand and see all of this corruption and craziness and are resisting it and want it to go away. That's what I see going on right now. It's like two birds that might be fighting in the sky. You know, they're both leaping up in the air to meet in the middle to attack each other. And that's the beautiful love energy and the ugly dark energy are facing off now.
Well, I will have to say that I don't necessarily agree with you about this. I don't necessarily disagree either because I'm not sure. But I will say this. I do definitely see the evidence of negative occultism in a lot of the things that are being done, like in the Bohemian Forest, as an example. Bohemian Grove, some of the ceremonies, certainly some of the things that I've heard about in terms of the ceremonies of some of these higher echelon people who are controlling the country are very disturbing and do seem to fit into that framework. I'm just not convinced that it's the bloodlines of royalty or that's really behind it. I do think that there is a central group here that are very influenced by not only negative occultism, but also by Nazi ideology and actual practice of the continuation of certain Nazi-like practices that are actually historically based. So I think there's something going on here, but I'm not about to give it over to bloodlines.
Well, you might want to read a book by Fritz Springmeier, The Illuminati Bloodlines, and he explains the whole thing. He researched it for...
He was in prison for 7 years for publishing the book.
Okay, where was he in prison?
In America. I don't remember exactly where.
So you're saying that they probably falsified some charge against them since it's not illegal to write a book, right?
Certainly, yeah.
And might want to take a look at Jordan Maxwell.
Okay.
Yeah, he was in prison for the same reasons that Solzhenitsyn was imprisoned in Russia. You dare not speak the truth. Don't you get the people woken up and riled up over the truth?
So that's generally how it works, isn't it? I mean, you find something to persecute somebody for that's not exactly the same as what you are really persecuting them for.
It's happening here now all the time. The journalists are being imprisoned and killed. Yeah.
Yeah, and the use of the Espionage Act to curtail whistleblowers.
Yep, totally illegal.
So I'm going to grant you your hypothesis for a moment because that's what you believe in. And so I would like to ask you, what if that is true, what can we actually do about it?
Well, what my mission is to write about this in songs and to use the music to penetrate the soul. And we are witnessing every day, we are collecting, and Blaise is funneling the ideas, and we develop songs from this observation and this awareness. I cannot anymore.
We've lost so many friends and so many connections in our social circle by even discussing any of this, because people cannot believe that everything they've always believed in is false, and they don't even want to look at one aspect of it being something else other than what they've always believed. But we went through this ourselves. I mean, believe me, as you and I, Johnny, discussed in our last talk, that, you know, I had religious beliefs that I had to let go of too when I realized they were unfounded. And that's, it's painful. It's hard to let go of what you believe in. And then for us, the more we dug and looked into this whole situation, everything we were ever told was a lie. Wow. So we live in a world that is, you know, it is the Matrix. It's a totally false reality.
Yes, yes, yes.
And when you wake up and unplug from the Matrix and you see what it really is, and then you want to go try to wake up the other people and say, hey, you want to take this thing out from the back of your neck and unplug and look at what the world really is. And they're like, get the fuck away from me.
FCC.
Well, you know, for myself, one of the things that happened to me, as I mentioned, is that I started to relook at 9/11. And I don't want to go into the details of that, but the point is, I decided to talk to some people about it. I wound up with a lot of people from my family, and I started to bring it up to them as individuals. And some of them said, well, yeah, that could be, but, you know, but none of them really wanted to pursue the conversation at all. And this was just on a very narrow political framework.
Yeah, it's so hard that people just don't want to talk about it because it's the number one, as a foreigner, becoming an American because I had a purpose and witnessing this. And it was, to me, the biggest treason that a government can do on its citizen. It's just appalling.
9/11, yeah.
And the truth is coming out. The truth will come out completely. The 28 pages will come out. It's going to come out. And we'll figure out what it is. We know what it is. When the American people will go, really? No way. Really? No. Yes. Oh, my God. It's going to be a change of awareness, and America will change its political direction.
But as far as stopping this evil power that, you know, has taken over everything for thousands and thousands of years, you know, what can people like you and I do?
I think we can do a lot. And later on in our discussion, I'd like to sort of propose certain things that we can do. But I do think that part of it, honestly, in my mind, as you know, because of, you know what I do, is music. Part of it is through, because music has been a very deleterious effect in our country now. It's like we discussed in our last program. It's dumbed down things, and it's injected a certain type of violence and unlawfulness into the whole atmosphere in between the bubblegum non-reality, just chewing on it and listening like a cow chews on its cud, and not really moving people to do or think about anything.
No, it glorifies thuggery, and what good does that do us?
Well, we're going to ask you, Zave, a little bit about your instrumental global musical project. Tell us a little bit more about it. I know you described a little bit in the last show.
I started with one track that had an Irish vibe to it. And actually, our son was still here when I did it, right? It was
yeah.
Last year, yeah. And, you know, I am a blues guitarist. I'm a blues rock country guitarist.
Right.
So, okay. And I had the acoustic going on, and I wanted to, you know, to stretch a little bit and to do something different. So I randomly, with my drum program, randomly created rhythms to jam, and something came up that sounded Irish. I felt like, well, man, let's develop this. And the instrumentation that I had at the time, and I wanted to keep it this way purposefully, was one acoustic guitar, one microphone, one tambourine, one harmonica, one bass, and that's it.
Really cool, because some of these different forms of music that you're playing are using radically different instruments, right?
Well, I'm using only...
No, not you. I mean, in the indigenous places that you're, you know, like Greece, say, they use certain instruments that you weren't using at all, but it sounds like...
It sounds like a bouzouki.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. If you take a guitar and you tune it a certain way, and you learn the phrasing of what a bouzouki player, ding 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 ding, you can do this with an acoustic guitar, obviously.
That's what I thought was really cool, is that you're taking the simplest, you know, just ordinary instruments, and you're creating all these unique sounds that usually you get from other instruments.
That's the idea. You see, I'm a painter. I'm a musical painter. And I use a term that is very dear to me. It's psychoacoustic.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So being a painter, I have a brush, and I can use my brush to paint green, blue, yellow. I can have a fat brush, I can have a small brush. So I can have a guitar, an electric guitar, a five-string guitar, a bouzouki, or a banjo, or a mandolin. Or it does not matter, because notes are notes. Now, depending on how you play the notes, how you phrase the notes, and how the frequency and the tone of the notes are merged together to create a canvas of musical structure. That's, you know, I swim in that. This is very easy for me to do. So taking this and for other purposes, is I don't have a collection of instruments of typical classical. I don't. I just have seven guitars and a bass. That's all I have. And the acoustic and electric guitars. So I had to be creative and use them, you know, in a slightly different way. So I started with one track, and it sounded, you know, it was fun. It was, oh my God, this is Ireland, done in my studio here in the mountains. So I took that track and I sent it to my publisher. And he said, wow, that's interesting. Just exactly the way you feel. He said, well, that's interesting. Can you make more? And I go, sure. How many do you need? So I told him about the idea to do an around the world, because it's world music. That's the concept that I had. And he said, oh, that sounds great. How many can you make? So I thought, well, I'm going to make 8. Like Jules Verne said, around the world in 80 days, I'm going to do around the world in 8 tracks. So I started developing. You go around the world, you got Arabic, you got Chinese, you got Russian, you got Italian, you got Spanish, you got some French, you got, and it's so fun to do. And I went to 8 and I couldn't stop, because at that point I had so many ideas. So I went up to 12 and I did an album of 12 world track to BMG, and they are marketing it hard, and I got breakdown. The album has been licensed already in different territories.
Terrific.
All the tracks done. I don't necessarily agree with the amount of licensing, but it's the machine is on and it's being distributed. It's happening.
Well, with all these tracks, how did you come up with the piece? I believe it's part of this, called Alligator Track.
So after this album of world music was done, my publisher, again, BMG, said, well, do you do slide? I go, well, kind of. I never have really looked into slide guitar that much, but, you know, let me look into it. What do you need? And he said, well, I have a request for something that sounds like Justified or Breaking Bad, which are two television shows. Music, the music behind it, it's swampy. It's kind of you know, slide guitar with a dobro and something really Alabama-ish kind of, you know. And I thought, well, let me take a look at this. So I went on YouTube. I looked at Derek Trucks. I looked at Juan Allman and the slide players. And I felt like, well, I can do that. This is fun. So I hooked up my bottleneck, which is a part of a cutoff from a beer bottle. And I started experimenting and changing the tuning on the guitar. And I went, wow. That opened a whole palette of sounds that I never used before. And so I put myself in the Ozarks and I started looking at videos of you know, what's happening in these regions and kind of the heavy, humid. You know, it has a special color. And because I'm a musical painter, I looked at the color of this type of music and I offered my version. And he said, okay, how many can you make? So how many do you need? So right now I developed 3 tracks and I have another 5 to do and using the same kind of colors. And because it needed image support, I made my own little video to support the music and I called it Alligator Swamp.
Oh, Alligator Swamp, yes. Well, let's play it. Alligator Swamp. We'll be right back. Well, let's get on to another subject. A lot of the problems that we face are the response of various countries to American participation in efforts that directly reward the defense and energy industry with great financial benefits, as well as many diverse American corporations and multinationals with all kinds of corporate, involvement in these countries that we have involved ourselves with. So my answer to this question is, as a matter of fact, every single problem, in terms of what we've been discussing, in regards to every single problem facing this planet, is that we must find a new comprehensive paradigm, a new conception of planetary governance, quite the opposite of the so-called ideology of those who promoted the idea of a new world order. So let's just go very specifically into some of these areas. Given the huge economic influences of oil in our economy, should the United States back away from oil as a main driver of our energy and pursue vigorously a path of alternative energy? What do you think?
I will attempt to answer by asking questions so your listeners can think about the statement you just made. First is, what is energy? So people out there, think about this question. What is energy? Energy is life. If you control the energy, you control the life. So energy is electricity. Electricity is heat, hospitals, communication, computers. It's electricity is life. You cannot conceive and sustain life on this planet the way we do without electricity. If you remove electricity from our life, imagine the amount of deaths is going to be in the world. So the entities that control energy control everything, the planet, society, and life at large. Right now, the energy that they control is oil-based. So the most important source of control on the planet is oil. Oil is Middle East, number one, Saudi Arabia, controlled by Saudi Arabia and the U.S. And the U.S. is an oil-driven entity. The Bush family is an oil family. The Nazi party was financed by Rockefeller and Bush. Bush is Texas. Rockefeller was Texas. Rockefeller was Esso, Standard Oil. It's about the war in Iraq. The war in the Middle East, it's always oil-driven. So to answer your question, who controls the energy controls the world. The day Saudi Arabia and the Middle East are losing the grasp on the control of life on the planet, it will go very fast and they will lose their power and their control. Because outside of oil, these countries bring absolutely nothing to society and civilization. Absolutely nothing.
I want to bring in a much larger component to this. You do believe that there are alternative energies that could replace oil, not just solar and wind, but other alternative energies. Do you not or not?
Yes, absolutely. I recently read last year, two different men had invented a source of energy that could power a whole house. It was the size of like a little cat's sleeping bed in a circular device that based on Tesla information. And apparently it's, you activate it. And once it's been activated, I guess you have to plug it into your wall and bring it up to speed. And from that moment on, it will self-renew and power your home and everything in it indefinitely. And this man in India who invented it said he wants to make it available to everyone in the world, but he will only charge $200 for each of these devices. And for people who are very poor and cannot afford the $200, he has investors who are willing to create a fund for the needy so that everyone can get one, whether they can come up with that money or not. Now, I haven't heard another peep about it.
If you can find the guy, let me know.
So there's definitely technology that exists that can give us self-renewing indefinitely in perpetuity.
For free. Yeah.
For free. Free energy. Well, the powers that shouldn't be do not want this to ever get into our hands. So,
but you would say that they already have it, right? They already know about it. That's how come they can do things like have a private space program. Well, I have a question about this. This is like where I'm going with this. It's a little bit off track. So you hear about the private space program and UFOs and this tremendous power, I guess you call it net zero energy development. What would be the word for that?
Zero point energy.
Zero point energy. So you hear of all these things, and I have to ask myself, then why the hell are they focusing on oil? Well, you know, you hear other things. You hear, I don't know if you've gotten into this part, but you hear about experiments in time travel. Of course, there's been remote viewing, all these very highly advanced technologies and methodologies. Well, why on earth, if they really have these things, like I know people would say that Mars is already inhabited and other planets, and we've gone to the stars already. How, if they have all this, why on the earth would they focus on oil? Why would they focus on something that they don't need and could actually abundantly, you know, create this enormous thing for us? Now, I want to also say that, you know, you have things like UFO abductions. You have people telling extraordinary stories about this sort of conspiratorial regime, the Illuminati, and things like that. And I'm wondering if there isn't a certain amount of disinformation and mind control in some of these extraordinary claims. Because if they have all this stuff, why the hell aren't they using it? How would it hurt them to use it? What would they gain? If we can go to the stars, we can populate the stars. We don't have to depopulate the Earth, which is something we'll discuss.
But see, Johnny, their agenda is not to propel humanity to its highest potential. It's to keep us as their slaves. They feed off our energy. They are very greedy. That's why they're going to take every drop of oil out of the ground that they can and suppress the better forms of energy.
Well, why don't they take their zero point energy, and they don't have to have slaves? They can have robots and stuff. Why are they wasting their time on this primitive human bullshit? Excuse my language.
That's what they're going to do.
I'm not saying they're not doing it. I'm asking why. Why would they bother? Why wouldn't they just go ahead and create a very nice planet and have their little corner? Why do they have to have the slaves and the all this negative technology?
Because they are not beings of light like human beings are beings of light. These are not human entities. They are part human, but there's a part of them that is not human, that is very dark, that has no empathy and no love and no creativity. And they hate humans. We are, to them, we're just their little orcs, you know, that they can, you know, line up and be their slaves and, you know, get the oil out of the ground and do all the work for the big corporations. And so that all the people at the top get very, very rich and we're just the slaves. They don't like human beings. And so, of course, they don't want to share the technology that they have and that they keep hidden from us. It's for their own purposes to propel them into
our... They don't really need us, though. Do they? Why would they need us with all this technology? And this technology is the kind that could replenish the planet. I mean, and they'd have a nice planet, and they can send us a bunch of us to the stars, and they could have large parks and everything. I don't quite see.
That's their plan, Johnny, but it doesn't include us.
Yeah, but why not? What's the difference?
They don't like us.
Because they don't like us? Now, you're talking about prominent people, though, aren't you? Not all these people are hidden. I mean, you're talking about people like Kissinger or Bush, right?
Yeah. They're
psychopaths, yes.
I'm just saying they live here. They go to restaurants. They watch movies. And they seem to be integrated somewhat into our world. Why wouldn't they like that to be a little nicer, where they go to food restaurants and they're not as poisoned? If they're poisoning it on purpose, they know it's poison, right?
Well, yeah, but they know what's poison and what's not. They have their own, you know, organic food, and they have their own vaccines that don't have the bad stuff in it. You know, they live a very rarefied life, totally separate from us.
Do you think, Blaze, that it's possible that some of this, anyway, is trying to convey to the masses that they have extraordinary powers, and they are sort of so powerful and so omniscient and so omnipresent that they can do almost anything, and so you'd be terrified of them? I mean, in other words, they're terrifying you because they don't have all the marbles they claim to have.
The power to tax is the power to control.
I would say so. I heard the Beatles song.
Everything comes from that. This is why in 1913, the bankers pushed the Federal Reserve Act on Woodrow Wilson. And this is why later on that year, the IRS was created. There's an army of tax soldiers.
But he's talking more about, you know, some...
If they're so intent on this type of control through money, why don't they just create some gold alchemically? I think 10% of Sir Isaac Newton's library was devoted to alchemy. And we know that metals can be changed just with nuclear energy, you know, nuclear technology. And they have all this technology. Why do they have to bother? That's what I keep asking myself. I said, if they're so powerful, why are they using manipulative things like oil or the currency and financial markets and all this other stuff in order to... Why are they wasting their time when they should get? Why is Bush staying here? Why are they staying in? You know, why don't they just go off to Beta Hydra or something and have fun there?
Because they like planet Earth. It's beautiful. They are
they're kind of messing it up, aren't they? I mean, they're doing all. Well, let's go into how they're messing it up. I've done enough questioning because I would agree they are messing up the Earth. Or someone's messing up the Earth. Let's talk about the existence of chemtrails that are deliberately flooding the skies with chemicals dangerous to human beings.
Yes, very dangerous.
I've heard various theories about chemtrails, and I hate to tell you, but there's one that I just heard. They claim that its purpose was by the government to deflect dangerous solar activity from the sun. I did dismiss this. I didn't think it was true. But is this really happening? Or are they trying to poison us with chemtrails? And what is that all about?
Oh, boy. Well, the chemtrails are particulate that is sprayed every day all over the world. The particulate is made up of various salts like barium and aluminum, and it also has nanoparticles of red blood cells in it and viruses and God knows what else they're putting out there. There is a disease that has cropped up in the recent decade called Morgellons disease. Have you heard of that?
I've heard of it, but I don't really remember what it is.
There are fibers that drop out of the sky that look like black, sticky spider webs that people have found all over the country, and they've taken them to private laboratories to have them analyzed, and people have gotten sick. This Morgellons disease is from the chemtrails, and people are having fibers grow out of their body through their skin, and then it gets red and bloody, and it will never heal. I mean,
that's what it is. That's what the symptoms are of Morgellons disease.
The symptoms are of Morgellons, and you see these long strands of fibers growing out of their skin, and it's creepy. And so, some people who have this are actually scientists, so they grab the fibers and, you know, they dig into skin and take out a little sample and look at it under the microscope, and crystals are being formed, microscopic crystals, and it's from whatever they're spraying in the sky. Now, when they spray this stuff, not only does it acidify the soil, we have to breathe, so we're all breathing this stuff in, and this aluminum and barium, it's such nanoparticle size that it goes right through the blood-brain barrier, and it's permeating our bodies, and I don't think it could be good for us. I don't think they're spraying it because it's going to make us, you know, gain 10 points in our IQ and be physically strong to never get sick again. You know, it's all part of the plan to do us in and to destroy agriculture. Their plan is to eradicate human beings except for a small little army that they need to do their bidding, and the rest will be robots, and then they're going to become cyborgs. They're going to, you know, grow body parts that they need to replace from time to time and, you know, put in some machinery, be a little bit like Terminator, you know, where you're half man, half machine, and live forever. That's their plan. So they have built these underground cities that we talked about in the last show. And whatever the conditions get on the surface of the earth, when it's unlivable, they'll just go underneath and stay there for as long as they need to. They've got their doctors, they've got their technology, they've got their little organs that are growing, they've got their organic food growing under the ground with fake grow lights. So if they want to launch a nuclear war, or, you know, they don't care. They can stay underground for a very long time. We can go through another ice age. They plan to live forever and make themselves gods. This is like, it's so beyond science fiction that no one wants to look at it and think it might be true, but that's what it is.
Well, this part of me that's contrarian is coming up again, and I'm seeing these people living in this mansion on a 300-acre estate, which is completely beautifully groomed. I mean, it's just beautiful landscaping, and they live in this house with wonderful antiques and some modern furniture and all the latest technological entertainment that they can have. And at night, when it comes to about 2 o'clock, the whole family goes out and kills a bunch of people. And then they go home to their luxury estate. Because that's what I don't understand. They could have such a beautiful, nice life, and a lot of them do right now. Why are they going to go underground and create the conditions for a nuclear war? I'm not saying that that isn't happening, because as we'll discuss, I do believe that the conditions for nuclear war are being allowed. I mean, it's just incredible. But anyway, let's get into this more, though, Dave Blaze. I guess at this point, I'll have to bring up what some would call the most overwhelming and frightening so-called conspiracy theories, which we mentioned a little bit. The idea of this is part of an attempt to intentionally depopulate the world. I don't know what I think of this concept, but I do know that with so many things happening that border on almost psychopathological avoidance of examining consequences, including the continuing development of nuclear weaponry and provocative excursions affecting countries with a toxic love of developing that weaponry without any real action, there might as well be the intentional depopulation agenda, because war, famine, extraordinary environmental accidents, extreme weather and changes in the climate, toxic food and toxic medicinals add up to a very nice agenda with that goal, whether intentional or not. But is it? You think it is, right?
It's intentional. Oh, yeah. And you said the word. They are psychotic. We're not dealing with people who are normal. They are psychotic to the degree that, you know, they may end up destroying themselves as well. It doesn't even enter their minds that that might possibly be the result. They're so driven by their greed and their lust. They have a lust for pain and suffering. They enjoy watching us suffer and take things away from us and make life harder.
Bonnie, that almost sings to me the core thing that you're saying. You're saying they're willing to avoid using their alternative technology and everything to save the planet in order to enslave us, because they enjoy it, because they're the rich family that's going out at night killing people just for the fun of it, because they're living in a mansion and they're living in the middle of a wonderful landscaped paradise.
Exactly.
Hunters do the same thing on Sunday morning.
What does?
They take their rifle, they go in the woods, and they're going to kill animals, and they're going to feel good, and it's going to be good.
Well, that is true. But that doesn't hurt them. I mean, they kill the animals, they might enjoy it, but they go back home, and they don't have to think all day about some massive extermination plot.
We're just cattle to them. We are cattle to them, nothing more. Or chickens, you know?
Sounds to me we're more like deer, insofar as they enjoy hunting us.
Oh, except they've put us in herd mentality. Absolutely. The mind control has created herd mentality.
All right. Well, we're speaking of poisoning the environment. We got the air, but let's look at fluoride in the water. What do you think of that?
Well, first of all, who invented that?
Fluoride.
The fluoride.
I think it's a waste product, and I think it may be related to nuclear waste product, but I don't remember exactly. Do you remember?
Yeah, this is a technology that comes from the Nazis. Hitler developed, let me ask you this, how come you can take 6 million people, put them in a camp, and have them quietly sitting down and waiting for their deaths? How can you do this to 6 million people? Because they are drugged, because they are starving, and because the fluoride is a mind destruction drug.
It lowers your IQ and it makes you weak. You don't feel, you have no fight left.
That's right.
It takes away your fight instinct.
1932, Nazi Party creation created this system. Number two, a Nazi, the money was coming from the US. Number three, the way the rise of Hitler in popularity is the same as we've seen with Obama. Number four, to tell the German people that the Jews have to be eradicated because the conditions they live in is because of the Jews. We have the same racism going on right now. It's all engineered so we kill each other and we hate each other and we don't trust each other, we don't love each other. It's all about divide, conquer, and destruction. It's all about the biggest name that I could see to synthesize all that is happening now and that started happening in 1972. I spell it C-O-N-T-R-O-L. It's all about controlling. It's all about control. Everything we do, everything they do is to control us. Everything we do is to serve them.
Okay, that's a comprehensive answer.
This is falling under, and I would like your listener to go check that out. Agenda 21.
You can find it on the UN's official website. Just do a search for Agenda 21. But
Agenda 21, written by the UN, they say this is to help.
Yeah.
But because everything is inverted, you have to look at what is Agenda 21 outside of the UN.
Well, why don't you describe it to some degree?
Agenda 21 is 20% of depopulation over 60 years.
Okay.
Incomplete.
So this is completely documented by a United Nations official.
No, yes.
You're not going to see it on the official. It's going to be worded like sustain, like earth, humanity, better life.
You can read in between the lines. And a lot of it has to do with the Bureau of Land Management going in and stealing land from landowners to say that, you know, for some reason they need it for the government. It's for conservation. It's for, you know, the turtles that are going to die if humans stay on the land. And they joke and laugh how they, you know, they'll buy a ranch of, you know, I don't know, 100-acre ranch and pay them a pittance for it and force them to move off their land and, you know, pay them 1/10 of the value of their property. And it's part of their plan to, they don't want humans living on most of the United States. They want it to all be government protected, you know, environmentally and for the animals protected so that human beings can't be on it. And that's part of what's behind the
green mask.
Well, what's behind the global warming. Oh. They're using global warming to start to aid, you know, that's part of the Agenda 21, to get people off the land. If you convince human beings that they're breathing in and out and eating and pooping and driving a car and putting their trash in the dump, destroying the planet, it's all our fault. We are destroying the planet, which is not true.
Well, I thought that global warming is usually attributed mainly to carbon emissions.
Yes.
Carbon dioxide emissions, I mean.
CO2.
CO2 comes from
humans.
Cool.
Now, let me ask you this. People out there listening to this program. CO2, I'm asking you this. What do the trees breathe?
CO2,
right?
People who have big greenhouses that they're growing vegetables, flowers, whatever, they put CO2 machines inside the greenhouse to enrich the level of CO2 so that the plants will be hardier, they'll grow larger. CO2, the amount of CO2 on the planet right now, we don't have a problem. We have
it's not enough.
We have a lower CO2 level than we did 100 years ago, and our trees are dying. Our trees are dying off because of the chemtrails, actually, but the CO2 levels are lower than they were 100 years ago, not higher. And CO2 is what feeds all things that grow out of the ground. That's their oxygen. So plants and humans are very symbiotic in that we exhale CO2, they take it in and release oxygen back to us. So what's going to happen when all the trees die and the agriculture can no longer grow because the soil has become too acidic? They are not in a big hurry. They could always just, you know, go underground and unleash, you know, fall upon us with nuclear war and be done with it and just, you know, stay underground for 100 years and come back up and start over. I don't know. But they're doing it slowly. They don't want the people to rise up against them and understand what they're doing. So they do it in a hidden way. And they do it through every single aspect of life, what we breathe, what we eat, all the restrictions on our movement and our taxation, and you have to buy health insurance or we're going to fine you. We're going to take whatever little bit of money you have until you have nothing. And
now this is outrageous because we are in a country where I assume that coming to this country and becoming an American citizen, I am then subject to the law of the land. Can we agree with that? And we have been controlled by the land, by the law of the sea, and not the law of the land. Number two, the law of the land in America is the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. That's why I'm here. And it's not being enforced. It's being debunked, and it's being, the justice system is throwing it in the garbage. So if we don't react to this, and if people don't go, stop it, this is wrong, this is America, this is our law of the land, we'll fight for it, because if we don't, our freedom will be gone. It's going to be over.
So in my opinion, since the little people, I mean, the little people, all we can do is have the knowledge. And through the information, the truthful information, connect the dots and understand what we're up against.
Here's a clip from Zave and Blaze's song, I Made It.